And turn to Acts chapter 16. Acts chapter 16. We'll start in verse 1. Acts 16, verse 1. Then he, being Paul, came to Derbe and Lystra, and behold, a certain disciple was there named Timothy, the son of a certain Jewish woman who believed, which is a synonym for was a Christian, but his dad was a Greek. So his mother was a Christian, but his dad was a Greek and a non-Christian. He was well spoken of by the brethren who were at Lystra and Iconium. This was Timothy. So Timothy was well spoken of, this son of this certain Jewish woman. And Kaufman said, Paul being stoned at Lystra on the first tour was not an indication of failure, because out of that tragic experience, glorious fruits of the gospel appeared. On his second return to Lystra, Paul was rewarded with the emergence of a young convert who would become a faithful companion. Also, two of the 27 New Testament books would be written to him and would bear his name, 1 Timothy and 2 Timothy. These verses reveal the good reputation of Timothy, not only in his home community of Lystra, but also in the more important city of Iconium as well. Those being somewhat sister cities next to each other, Iconium being the bigger city than Lystra, just northwest of Lystra. And I'm going to say, looking on this map, it's probably about 40 miles. They're probably 40 miles apart, something like that. Timothy had been baptized during Paul's previous visit to Lystra. He had witnessed the stoning of Paul, had wept over his near-death body, had seen him rise up and return into the city, and had seen him depart the next day with unconquerable determination into another field of conflict for Christ. Timothy's mother's name was Eunice. Timothy's grandmother's name was Lois. Luke did not give the names here, since he was primarily concerned with the racial problem relating to the circumcision of Timothy. Despite the fact of Timothy's dad being a Greek, Eunice had reared him in the Hebrew faith, and in this circumstance, Paul decided to circumcise him. Influence is a frightening force. It is the one thing that lives on after one dies. The value of the influence of godly parents and grandparents cannot be overestimated. The effect of a good influence can be a vital factor in bringing about eternal good for children and grandchildren. Verse 3. Paul wanted to have him go on with him, and he took him and circumcised him because of the Jews who were in that region, for they all knew that his dad was a Greek. And Kaufman said, Paul, seeing in this promising young man the qualities which would commend him to the work of a missionary, decided to take him along on the journey. The fact that Paul circumcised Timothy was not to make him a Christian, because he was already a Christian, having obeyed the gospel on the first missionary journey. Paul had gone on record in the previous chapter to show emphatically that circumcision is not a requirement to become a Christian. The reason for the circumcision of Timothy was because of the Jews who were in that region, as Luke clearly stated. Knowing Timothy's dad was a Greek, the Jews would have assumed that Timothy had never been circumcised. Furthermore, they would have raised trouble for Paul over that issue wherever possible. And therefore, purely as a matter of expediency, Paul stopped the trouble before it ever got started by the circumcision of Timothy. Those who have accused Paul of inconsistency in this, in the light of his adamant refusal to circumcise Titus previously to this, have failed to recognize the essential differences in the two situations. Titus, being a Greek or a Gentile, and thought by some to be Luke's brother, had no Jewish connection whatsoever, and there was no way Paul would have allowed him to be circumcised as a precondition of salvation. Paul did all he could to gain the trust of the Jews, short of compromising the gospel. Paul would write in 1 Corinthians 9, verse 20, "And to the Jews I became as a Jew, that I might win Jews." If Paul had circumcised Titus, men would have construed that as evidence of the necessity of circumcision for salvation. Everyone understood the circumcision of Timothy. He had been a Christian for several years previously, and therefore no one would think that he now needed circumcision to become a Christian. The decree of the Jerusalem Council had made it clear that circumcision had nothing to do with salvation. The Gentiles did not have to begin practicing it, nor did the Jews have to cease practicing it to be saved. And since he brought up the decree that came from these Jewish council or this meeting at Jerusalem, they, as Luke is going to explain here, that they were giving out everywhere they went to these congregations, they were handing out these decrees on all these congregations. So it was letting them know, not only is being circumcised and becoming a Jewish proselyte, that is not a precursor and a precondition to salvation and becoming a Christian, but then there are these 4 points that were mentioned that that they needed to heed to, and which the Holy Spirit had them write in the letter, that if they would do these things, then they would do well. Verse 4, "And as they went through the cities, they delivered to them the decrees to keep, which were determined by the apostles and elders at Jerusalem." And then they state in verse 28 in Acts 15, "For it seemed good to the Holy Spirit and to us to lay upon you no greater burden than these necessary things." So it was most importantly the Holy Spirit is the one that determined these decrees to hand out. And Kaufman said, "These decrees were the conclusions of the meeting in Jerusalem covered in chapter 15. The essential message of those decrees was that Gentiles were not to be burdened by circumcision and law-keeping. By providing copies of the decrees for these congregations, Paul gave them a defense against the Judaizing Christians. This was the position Paul had required the apostles and elders in Jerusalem to accept. Even the 4 prohibitions regarding idols, fornication, blood, and things strangled were grounded not in the law of Moses primarily, but in God's teachings which predated the Mosaic covenant," from Genesis 9. And verse 5, "So the congregations were strengthened in the faith and increased in number daily. Having been freed from the troublesome insistence of the Judaizers for the moment, the congregations prospered spiritually and numerically. The issue, however, was not dead. The Pharisee Christians would trouble the whole region of that day with their efforts to disrupt Christianity by mixing elements of Judaism with it, and the issue would not be effectively eliminated until the armies of Vespasian and Titus," the Roman armies, "removed 3 things: removed the Jewish state, removed the daily sacrifices, and removed the Jewish temple itself." 20 years later, in 70 AD. The books of Hebrews and Romans were addressed in part to this very issue, and Galatians, written about this time of 50 AD, is full of it. But this would trouble the congregations, definitely the congregation at Jerusalem, until God had the Roman Empire to remove the Jewish state, the daily sacrifices, and the Jewish temple in 70 AD, 20 years from this time of Acts 16. How strange it is that the Judaizers have never disappeared. Even now, 2,000 years later, the Judaizers are still in business throughout the denominations, and he came up with 7 points, attempting to bind the Sabbath observance on people, dragging instruments of music into the worship, even though David himself was condemned for that. The third point, devising daily sacrifices such as that of Catholic Mass. Fourth, ordaining a priesthood separate from the congregation. Five, lighting sacred candles. Six, requiring certain periods of official former fast. And seven, imposing diet restrictions. We will end there, and Lord willing, we'll pick up with verse 6 next week.